Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
Okay, so welcome to the Truth to Power show. I'm your host, VJR Nathan, and this is Radio Free Brooklyn. So we're here with Jesse Kilgus. Jesse Kilgus has a hypnotic and darkly charged take on Americana. New York-based singer-songwriter Jesse Kilgus possesses a poet-like precision and power to tap into the strange wonder of everyday experiences. Former actress, she was inspired to make music. And her new album, The Fastening?
Fastness,
that's mm-hmm. right. The Fastness is coming out on June 28th. So why don't we start off with just like where were you born and where did you grow up? Okay. Tell us a little bit about the circumstances around that.
Okay. I grew up on a farm in Massachusetts, very close to Providence, Rhode Island. But it was in Massachusetts, but it was a very small town. And the only thing in the town was the Cumberland Farms.
Yeah. So what is the Cumberland Farms? Yeah.
Yep.
So it was like you live near the farm, not on the farm.
No, right? I lived on a farm.
On a farm, yeah.
Yeah, with horses and chickens and dogs and stuff.
Mm-hmm. And how does that compare to the experience? Tell us a story about living on the farm.
Okay. You want a dark story?
Yeah, anything comes to mind.
Okay.
I guess.
So we had chickens one time. My mom thought it would be a good idea to get chickens, and honestly, I love animals, but chickens are pretty gross and dirty. And it was my yeah. responsibility to take care of the chickens and feed them. And they attracted rats. And a couple times I went out there and rats jumped out in front of me. And so I didn't really like the chickens. But one time my parents went away on for a weekend and left us with a babysitter, my sister and a friend of mine. And the chickens got out. And my dog killed the chickens in front of us.
Oh, God.
And the babysitter was useless. She just ran in the house screaming and crying. And my friend and I had to bury all the chicken bodies.
So, oh, God. So it was a lot. What was the age?
I think I was about 8. So growing up on the farm, you learn about life and death real fast.
Yeah. That's great.
So, I wasn't expecting to tell that story today when I got up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, as you grow older, how many siblings do you have? Or
2 sisters.
So they're both older? Or?
I'm in the middle. So
in the middle, because the one older one younger, mm-hmm. yeah. Yeah. So what was your relationship with them?
Typical middle child relationship, I think, to siblings. We're much closer now than we were growing up.
Good. And what are their names? Can you tell?
Sarah and Maggie.
Good. And so as a middle child, you know, as a middle side syndrome or something, do you feel like you had to negotiate or had to balance a lot?
Maybe I was struggling with that. Everybody all the time, that sort of a position, I guess.
Yeah. And now where are they doing now? Or what are they?
My older sister used to own and run a restaurant in Providence, Rhode Island, but she's now a professional saddle fitter in Vermont. She lives on a farm again now. And has a lot of horses and is of the horse world now. And my younger sister is an interior designer and she lives in L.A.
Mm-hmm. And at what age did you start to get into poetry and arts and start that journey?
Very, very young. I used to be an actress and I was doing that from a really young age and kind of learning songs and making my parents listen to me sing them. And I built a theater on the ruins of this old barn building where I grew up, and my friends and I would put on plays starting from like age 5 and 6.
So what are these plays? You put on, you would script them, and then
we made one play I remember was called Tea at Brunch. I have no idea what it was about, but I remember the name of it, and my older sister and her friend and my friend who was my age, we all put on this play together and took it very seriously and made our parents sit down and watch it and, you know, yelled at them if they were talking during the play.
Yeah. So you performed it and you would, did you rehearse it? Did you go through?
We rehearsed it. Yeah. We took it very seriously. We had costumes and everything.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And was you one of the three you act as director, or was there some guiding, or were you just sort of kind of going with it?
I think so. I don't really remember much. Yeah. I do also remember we made a music video one time. You remember that show Solid Gold, the music show?
Mm.
We made our own version of that called Solid Silver.
Oh, cool.
And we all lip-synced hits of the day, and I was funnily enough, I didn't sing in this performance. I was one of the solid silver dancers. I found video footage of that recently. It was really entertaining.
Really good. So you're kind of going through this phase of performing, writing these scripts that you felt or you said were kind of, I guess, what was the, you were saying tea with brunch and...
I have no idea what that one was about. I have a vague guess it would be kind of like a Miss Marple murder mystery or something. Or the board game Clue,
So at that age, were you reading Miss Marple, I guess? Miss Marple is a...
No, but it was around. My mom is obsessed with British TV. So I think I probably just absorbed some of it.
Oh, was it a TV show or was it a book? Oh, it was a TV show. Oh, okay.
It was a book too, obviously, but I think she was into the shows.
So you watched the shows with your mom?
Bits and pieces.
Yeah. So you just kind of got the gist of what they were doing or the scenario, the kind of stock character.
Yeah.
You know, there's like, what would be a stock character in Miss Marple?
Well, Miss Marple was like an elderly detective lady. But I don't know. I don't really remember any of the characters in Tea at Brunch. But I think it was vaguely British inspired.
Oh, yeah. So I guess there might have been like a kind of a fumbling detective. And
possibly.
Like nowadays we think of that in terms of, I guess now in today's iteration of the British detective, what would be an example of today's, like, I'm trying to think now, like there's the, they have the reinvention of Sherlock.
Right. Yeah, those are great. With Cumberbatch there.
Yeah. Good, good. So so you're talking about, you got into singing. When did you start getting into?
When I was really young too. There were a lot of arts programs at the grade school I went to, and I loved all of the arts and didn't really care much for math or anything like that. But I was into singing and dancing and acting from a very early age.
So as you started going to singing, I guess when you went to college, you started to get, or was the threshold where you're like, oh, let me start kind of, thinking about this as a career path,
Well, actually, right before college, I had to defer college because I got an acting job. I was in the movie The Crucible, the adaptation of the Arthur Miller play. And that was amazing. It was a real movie and a real paid acting job. And then I went to NYU for acting and kind of thought, well, this is bullshit after actually working as an actor. Something I really liked about going to NYU was it was great to move to New York City and be around all these artists after growing up in kind of a conservative environment of New England.
When you're saying you went to this conservatory for acting, or was it a special school?
I went to NYU, so I was at a couple different acting studios, conservatories within NYU, and then I also took liberal arts classes. But after that, I went to drama school for 2 years in England and then worked over there as an actress.
Do you think the frustration was like the lack of creative control or that you weren't authoring the...
Eventually. I don't know. Drama school in England was fantastic. It's one of my favorite things I've ever done because it was a group of 14 people. We're all still pretty close friends. Just working on great plays for 2 years, 6 days a week. And then after that, I had some good acting jobs in England. And then I started to think, I had to move back here because of visa issues. And I think that theater here is kind of different than it is in England, and it didn't really speak to me anymore, and I didn't really necessarily see it as the rest of my life. And also, I was lucky enough to have a small part in a musical written by Tom Waits with one of my favorite singers in it, a woman named Marianne Faithfull, who I like very much, who's a very theatrical singer and performer. So being part of that production kind of made me think that I wanted to have more artistic ownership of things that I did going forward.
Okay. So why don't we play one of your songs just to give the audience a chance to listen to a previous song before we get to the new album,
you're playing an old one?
Then we'll get back to the new album and we can talk a little bit about kind of the construction of the album and such. So meanwhile, just talk a little bit about kind of how you compiled the first album, I guess, or how you...
Right. So, I I was introduced to my friend Charlie Nealand, who's part of Bushwick Book Club still, who's a record producer, and I started working on an album of covers with him and his then music partner Barb Morrison, and started with a Tom Waits cover and a Jacques Brel cover, and then they kind of asked me why I wasn't just writing my own stuff and kind of pushed me to write my own stuff, and so I started doing it and really fell in love with the process of songwriting.
Good, good. So this one I think I just picked out somewhat at random, but somewhat not. Just Kill Us in the Radio Gold, Riverboat Ramblers.
Oh.
So I,
wow, I haven't listened to this in like 8 years.
Let me see. Yeah. So tell us, do you remember kind of like the...
What the song, where...
To set it up, yeah.
Set up. We recorded this in Ireland, actually. It was a really cool experience at this residential studio called Grouse Lodge, which is built in these old farm buildings in the middle of nowhere. And we recorded this album in about 4 days. And I've spent a lot of time in Ireland, so yeah.
So why don't we talk a little bit about creative process? And because the summary episodes, a lot of times I have poets and authors come on and talk about kind of the mechanics or the nitty-gritty of, like, you know, not so much the meaning, not the meaning or not the, you know, what we put on it, but really the rituals associated with kind of how you, what you do when you sit down or, you know, or what do you, yeah, how is it working?
I go through phases of writing a lot and phases of not writing at all. And also I've tried in the past to write when I don't really feel like I'm being productive at all, and I find that it's best for me personally to just kind of wait it out until I feel like I'm ready to write again. But when I am writing, I'm usually working on about, I don't know, like 5 different songs at a time, and I'll start with just a phrase. It could be something I overhear, just a turn of phrase that I really like, and then I'll start with that and try to piece together some sort of longer theme or story or idea from that in terms of lyrics, and then I'll try to figure out what that would sound like if I were to sing it and put it to chords on the guitar. Sometimes when things are at their best, I can just sit down with the guitar and start strumming, and the whole thing will come out in one piece. Mm. That's ideal, but it doesn't happen all the time.
Yeah, yeah. I think it seems like, you know, a lot of the pieces that I listen to, you know, I kind of listen to different albums. So I'm just focusing, you know, different things that you produce. And I kind of feel like you're inhabiting a sort of specific space that resonates with some themes of, you know, isolation and the dialogue between you and other people. Kind of some of Strangers on a Train, I think, was one of them, one of the titles, right?
Or, oh, yeah. That's a Hitchcock film.
Yeah, and also it seemed to speak, though, I don't know, for me at least, it seemed to speak to kind of the larger thematic of, like, how we resonate with people. And I just, I don't even know if I can really package it, but mm-hmm. it just seemed to speak to me in regards to, you know, maybe feelings or, like, I was thinking, you know, they think a picture is worth 1,000 words, but, you know, maybe a song is worth, 1,000, like, emotions or something. Or
interesting.
The ocean. And how would you, when you get to a piece, like, how do you know it's over? How do you, like, you just time-wise? Or what do you, like, always, how do you inhabit that space and figure this is kind of some segment?
Instinct, I guess.
Yeah.
And just, you have to make decisions, too.
Mm.
And just not fretting too hard over any of them, because you can always write another song. And,
yeah.
Or you can always go back and change it, you know, so... Just whatever feels right.
Yeah. Good. So now, this new album you produced and created, what was kind of the, you would say, you know, how you progressing or how you kind of, where you got, what was, tell us a little bit about that process. And
okay, well, it's songs I wrote over a few years, and one of my, the most exciting elements of this album to me was bringing in my friends, Julie Leslie and Susan Wong, Leslie Graves and Julie Delano to sing on it. We sing in another band together, Jim Andralis and the Syntonics, which is an amazing band you should all check out. Mm. And we were recording his album last summer, and I was also recording my album, and so I just asked them if they'd come in the studio and sing on my stuff. And I felt like it really expanded everything and added so much to it. And that was kind of my favorite new element to add.
Mm. Okay, good. And so now you're going to be performing from that album?
You know? Yeah, I have a record release show on June 28th at Rockwood Music Hall, stage 3, the one downstairs, which is my favorite room there. And I'll be playing songs mostly from The Fastness, maybe a couple from The Past.
Mm.
Susan Wong's going to be joining me on harmonies, too.
Good.
Yeah.
And how about the kind of resonance with fans and people listening to the music at these shows that you've done? How does that kind of energy feel for you?
I never really know what to think about all that stuff. I mean, people have said that they've liked it, and some random blogs have written some great reviews, but I don't know. I don't.
Yeah.
I try to not take anything too seriously and just try to keep creating work and.
Yeah.
Having a good time.
So now you're doing a Bushwick Book Club, which
yeah.
is something, a project I guess you've been kind of collaborating or working with.
Yeah, I've been helping Susan Wong, the founder of it, a lot over the past year. I've been co-producing some shows. And we've been trying to get the authors involved a lot more and getting the authors to turn up and read and speak, and that's been a lot of fun. So the premise of that is that we curate a group of songwriters and other artists to create new works inspired by one particular chosen book. And that's something I've done in the past anyway without being part of book club is, you know, taking inspiration from books. And I lift a lot of ideas from things that I read. But yeah, that's a monthly performance series, and it's a lot of fun. It's usually a fairly eclectic group of songwriters, so there's a lot of variety in the performances.
Yeah, and I found that because I attended the last or one of them with Jonathan Ames' book, and I was never really here, right?
You were never really here.
Yeah. So, and, you know, I attended that, and the performances, you know, some of them were kind of challenging, you know, kind of like, you know, I guess inviting me into spaces that, at least in that context, I felt were a little challenging or kind of. You know, but in a good way. I think it's good to sometimes see and I think especially for challenging art, you know, and when it's coming from a real honest place, then, yeah.
Yeah. That was an especially long one, too. They're not usually, there was, in retrospect, we should have maybe had a few fewer performers on that.
That's okay. But I think, what about your experience kind of in within musical communities and, you know, kind of facilitating or acting? And, you know, like, what is the, like, the question basically is about kind of, you know, collaborations and these kinds of things.
Yeah.
And,
well, one of my favorite things about music or acting is the collaboration of working with a group of creative people on some sort of whole. It's my favorite part. So I actually, I write my own songs and have my own band, but I also sing harmony with a bunch of other people, and that's really fun for me too. I don't necessarily need to be the center of attention, but I just like to be part of something creative. And I, through that, I feel like I do have a few different musical communities here, which is really nice.
Good. So why don't we listen to Once from the Fastness?
Okay.
So this song, I think The Master was the one I was going to play.
Cool.
So let's see. So maybe you can say a few words on maybe this song or...
Sure. Well, this song is a good example of the harmonies, kind of lifting it to another level.
Yeah.
Was also, maybe I should say, inspired by Leonard Cohen. I wrote it right before he died. There was that interview with him in The New Yorker where he talked about being ready for death, and then his album came out. He talks about, I'm leaving the table.
Yeah.
And I wrote that song right after that, and then he died the next week.
Yeah, that kind of good leading, because I was thinking about, as I was listening to the song and kind of preparing beforehand, that, you know, I want to talk a little bit about kind of spiritual and religious topics in your upbringing and how they've evolved and, you know, the structures in which you kind of grew out of. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, well, I grew up going to a Protestant church on Christmas and Easter until I was about 8, and then we even phased that out. So my mom's kind of spiritual in an energy type way, and my dad was raised Lutheran. My mom was raised Catholic, but is not Catholic. My dad was raised Lutheran and maybe still believes some of that stuff, but I pretty much think I was raised nothing, really. But in my adult life, I've read a lot of Buddhist books, and I used to go to Shambhala temple, and I meditate every day. I don't prescribe to any sort of religion, but I do meditate every day, and I like a lot of the ideas that I've read about in Buddhist texts and stuff like that. I think there's an intersection for me in terms of art and spirituality.
Yeah. That's kind of, so just going back to you saying, so I guess your parents didn't instill in you any kind of, or didn't have kind of structure that you have to go to Sunday school or you have to go to the church or no mass or anything.
Nothing like that.
Yes, so there's nothing like that, yeah.
Which I'm kind of grateful for.
But when you spoke, when you kind of got a sense of, you know, what they believed and what they, where they're coming from, I guess, do you think you felt, or do you feel like they were informed by kind of these, or do you feel they were in tension with, or like, you know, it was like, was, you know, it was what they were always saying, did they kind of teach you what or how to believe, would you say, or the methodology?
Not really. It was just kind of avoided a little bit. I suppose my dad's family still goes to church and went to church. My grandparents went to church when they were alive and believe in Jesus, I think. But that was just never really a part of our life. And I guess as a family, we all kind of laughed about that.
Yeah.
Sorry, family. I hope you're not listening.
We can always edit that. No,
yeah. Delete that part.
So I think the main thing is like the idea that, you know, when I listen to songs like, you know, when you have the repeated refrain about the oracle and such, it's like, you know, I mean, at some level, I guess we understand the oracles are kind of guides and stuff like that. But I guess, you know, on a deeper level, it resonates because it's like, you know, we're all looking for that, some magical or something outside maybe that reveals, you know, it's like the fix-all, you know, and how, where is that gone? You know, I don't know. So kind of inhabiting that space of, do we need to have all the answers, you know?
Yeah, I guess maybe something that I was raised with that probably comes from my mom is maybe a belief in something pre-Christian. She's always been kind of interested in druids and runes and things like that. And we spend a ton of time in Ireland, in Western Ireland, growing up, and there's just something really mystical about that part of the world. And that kind of mystery and slash magic, potential for magic, is something that, to me, is spirituality.
Yeah, you know, definitely, I think.
Not a religion, but,
yeah. You know. Because I think once that we have that structure, you know, it's easy to, you know, fall into the trap that, you know, it's only those words can be used, you know, and then we kind of freeing ourselves to a different vocabulary, different.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So now at this stage, how do you, talking about kind of maybe the core guiding compass, or not even, it doesn't have to be in a religious context, but kind of what would you say is the, kind of a personal guiding, you know, what you say, you're talking about the discipline of meditation and such, but, you know, what kind of puts you through to.
Personally, I guess it sounds kind of trite, but it's really important to me to listen to my intuition and not second guess it and figure out what's right for me and let that be enough.
Yeah, I think one thing I had the experience of doing improv and kind of guided by the idea that there are no mistakes, you know, we think of mistakes because we're so rigid on patterns, you know, that you have a pattern and we're like, we have to maintain that pattern.
Right.
And if something is, something is, you know, kind of falls outside the pattern, we're like, oh, you know, it's a mistake or it's not really.
Maybe mistakes kind of give you new ideas or spark something more interesting.
Yeah, more pathways and more you know, disciplines, I guess. I don't know. But, yeah, and then kind of the, what else is coming up? How are you feeling? Or what's kind of coming up for you now?
To talk about?
Yeah, any stories? This week kind of breezed through so much.
Oh,
so
no.
Maybe a story from something that's coming out, a story that maybe you've kind of been, has it been in the back of your mind? Or?
I don't know.
Yes. Well, what happened this morning? Tell us about
what happened this morning.
After you woke up,
I brought my dog to daycare so that she wouldn't get into trouble while I'm here.
Uh-huh. So what kind of dog?
I worked.
What kind of dog was it? What kind of dog is it?
She said, edit that part out.
Oh, God.
No, it's fine. I work from home. But, she is a mutt. She's a rescue dog. She's probably husky and maybe shepherd or border collie.
Mm.
Her name is Clue. She came with that name.
Oh, good. Clue, I like that.
I like it too.
That's good.
It suits her.
Yeah.
She's got a really inquisitive face.
Yeah. So what happened? You said you took her to the vet?
Oh, no. I took her to daycare.
Oh, daycare. Okay.
Yeah. Something else I do, I don't know if you know, I'm also the development director at a nonprofit called Musicambia that runs music programs in prisons and jails.
Mm-hmm.
And so also this morning I was doing some work for Musicambia. But that's something I care a lot about too.
So tell us a little bit more about what they do. And
Our main program is at Sing Sing, and it's a program with 32 men there. We teach instrument instruction, composition, ear training, and then ensemble performance. So the really important aspect of that program is that everybody's learning an instrument, but then they all have to play together several times throughout the year. Being part of an ensemble is you're responsible. The whole is only good as good as every little piece. So,
yeah.
It's been really inspiring to be a part of. I've been going in and singing harmony with the guys, too. And I'm learning a lot about the criminal justice system and learning a lot about people and the possibility for change and life in general, I guess.
Yeah. And what's like, because I think it's like, it's interesting to see how, or kind of see an overview of how you're kind of coming from this one environment where you kind of, you're generating material like tea with brunch and you're kind of having this experiment and then you kind of go
tea
into
at brunch.
Tea at brunch. Oh yeah. Oh, tea at brunch. Okay. Yeah. That's good. And then, kind of how it evolved into, kind of this, path of, you know, connecting artists and having them respond to the art and, you know, classics and contemporary literature and how you're, now, you know, producing the fastness and all that. It's, you know, just kind of seeing how, what would you say is, you know, I don't know, like kind of something that you take away from, like, you know, a story maybe that kind of connects with your roots and brings you here. So like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, it's like, how is it all kind of?
How does it all add
up? Yeah.
Oh my God, I really don't know.
There
are a lot of different pieces, but they all kind of, I like being parts of different collaborative groups and the social service aspect is really important to me. When I was my first year of college, I kind of wavered, and the only time I ever went into the World Trade Center was to go to a meeting for the Peace Corps, and I was really considering going down that route or going further with acting, and then I chose acting, but clearly the service work is still in me too. So how do they all connect? I guess connecting with people in a creative way is kind of the most important aspect of my life. I don't know.
Yeah, definitely. I think that community is important. And, you know, when we do things kind of in our head, or we have the, you know, sometimes the idea may come and, but it's kind of, there's not a joy there. You know, it's kind of, the joy really comes from interacting and just allowing these, you know, like the influence of others to direct, you know, I guess, I don't know, you know, but, yeah, I mean, one thing, let me play one more song.
Okay.
Because we got like 10 more minutes. So I'll just play one more song and then we can do a final. I'll play one more song from the new album. Okay. What is it? What does it want from me?
Okay, cool.
I mean, well, maybe just tell you, what is it? What is it? What is it you want from me? Do you remember? Can you say a little few words about that?
It's a pretty simple, straightforward song. I'm really happy with how it came out, actually.
Yeah.
One of my favorite tracks on the album.
Uh-huh. And when you have like a, you know, kind of comparing the process of, you know, more the different songs on the album, like one being more difficult.
This is one that came when I just sat down with a guitar and started strumming, and the words and the music came together.
Yeah. So. Good, good. Yeah. And then so the process of, I'll switch to Dark Corners of Your Mind.
I like that one too.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good, good. So one thing I want someone to talk about is as a consumer, what you kind of, you know, what you've been reading or lately, or what you've been exploring musically, any kind of way in which you consume art, or so what's been coming up, or you can just talk about something maybe in the past that has been very influential on you, artists. Okay.
In relation to that song, I was just thinking about when I wrote that, I was listening a lot to Fairport Convention, this kind of Celtic 70s folk rock band, and that song was really influenced by them, and especially they have this beautiful version of a really old folk song called Rain or Dine. So I was listening to that a lot at that time. What else? Movies lately. I recently saw the Ruth Bader Ginsburg documentary, which was fantastic. Everybody should go see it.
Oh, good, good, yeah.
I'm reading The Tiger's Wife again right now because Bushwick Book Club's next show is inspired by that book by Taya Albrecht. It's a fantastic magical realism story that I highly recommend. Art, I don't think I've been to a museum lately.
But now it seems like so much of this digestible art is available on the internet. I feel like we're big connoisseurs of memes or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know?
I do like a lot of funny dog videos on the internet.
Yeah,
I feel like I really only go to museums when I go to other cities.
That happens to me too. I went to Denver and I really appreciated a lot of the art there, and being in New York, there's so much available, but I don't know. This is like, was the time, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that's not true. I went to an art opening last week.
Yeah.
Bushwick Book Club is doing a show inspired by Dean Haspiel's new comic book, The Red Hook. And he had an art opening book signing last week that I went to. It was fantastic. I think the art is still up. It's at Sunny's Bar in Red Hook.
Yeah, yeah. So, as far as like, maybe,
Oh, and you know what? Sorry, I interrupted you.
Yeah,
but
ahead,
I
yeah.
see a lot of friends' bands. So I see music really regularly, and it's generally people who I know. And I like supporting friends, but also I'm fortunate to have some really talented friends, so I enjoy going to those shows as well.
And
I've stumped you.
Yeah. I had something with them. Because I wanted to, cross section. You know, basically what's happening here. Is, you know, you're reading a book and you're producing a song, or you're reading a a poem or something, or you're reading a song. So like how is it? Tell us a little bit more about, like, do you focus in on one aspect and then kind of just, or has, where's the?
Yeah, I usually will find one line that I really like or part of a line, and then just write my own stuff from there. Use that as a jumping off point. I just had a thought about other art that I'm consuming. I've recently been on a huge Ingmar Bergman kick. And I love Bergman, and I've watched a bunch of his movies in the past, but recently I watched like 10 of them in a row. And then I really felt I needed to watch some comedy after that. But he's was a great storyteller. And one of the things I loved about his film work is his actors were all so good, and they were all the films are real ensemble pieces, and that's something I like about any type of art, if it's a real collaborative ensemble piece. So that's something that spoke to me, and just visually stunning as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that certain pieces like what was the specific movie you mentioned? You just meant the director, right? Or
Ingmar Bergman.
Which was there a specific movie that?
I recently watched Wild Strawberries. Fanny and Alexander, this piece he wrote for TV about his parents. I forget the name, The Best Intentions.
Yeah.
And then I watched a couple documentaries about him, too. I was a little obsessed for about 10 days, and now I'm over it.
Yeah, good, good. Yeah, I think it's interesting. Also, I'll go through a process of, like, you know, suddenly I remember something about a specific banal was someone who I was into for a long time. Like, you know, I watched one thing about the people who are starving and having hallucinations. The one about the dinner.
I forget the name of that one.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of like the dreamlike, and then you kind of like are watching that, and it's like it's something that is not necessarily there, but is kind of speaking to maybe would you say, a universal human experience? In the last conversation, we talked about archetypes and mm-hmm. and then how, you know, getting more specific kind of reveals or talks to that power center of the human experience, if that even, if there's such a thing, I don't know, you know, and how, like, you know, the way to get to a kind of a power center of like a universal human experience or archetypal human experience is to get actually more and more specific.
Specific?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting pathway, I think, to kind of like the quantum versus the, you know, something outer space, or, you know, like this, the two cliffs that you can go off, you know, I don't know.
Take your
pick. Yeah. And I think it's really interesting to, you know, I guess sit with, you know, like how these spaces can open up. Yeah. Good. So, yeah, and then I guess we'll wrap up with just, why don't you kind of tell a little bit about, tell a story about kind of something that's coming up for you in regards to maybe your relationship with someone who's very special to you.
Oh, my God.
We'll start with pick someone and then just go.
I'm going to choose my mom.
Yeah.
My mom is coming to my record release show by herself without my dad, which is kind of a big deal for her. I don't think she likes New York City at all.
No.
But my dad's going to be away, and so she's coming down to spend a couple days with me.
Yeah.
And she's coming to the show, which is kind of pushing herself out of her comfort zone.
Yeah.
Because she loves me.
Yeah, I know my mom also kind of, you know, she's always been a model for, you know, the kind of exploring of traditions and exploring of all these different, I guess you might call, you know, not adult education classes, but kind of something along those lines. Like, you know, that you think of, you know, as children, it's easier to kind of, you know, be open-minded or something like that. But then you grow older, it's like we have to kind of find those pathways of learning new skills And you know, a lot of people kind of avoid that, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like pushing myself outside of my comfort zone, but not all people do.
Yeah. So I guess thank you so much. I'm just going to give a few shout-outs to Radio Free Brooklyn. This is the Truth to Power show on Radio Free Brooklyn. And, you know, Radio Free Brooklyn is a 501c3 nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a free and open platform to our community and provide media literacy, education, and free expression. So this show kind of explores, you know, this show specifically explores like modalities of thinking and kind of connecting, you know, our practices to, you know, I think it's when you zoom out, practices to, you know, larger nerves and ideologies, but and it's not necessarily always, you know, explicitly there. But I think that, you know, when you look at a larger whole body of work, then you kind of hopefully kind of will tease out, you know, these. So I encourage everyone to go through our archives at, you know, truthtopowershow.podomatic.com. And you'll see, like, you know, kind of more thematically how, you know, modalities and thinking are very much connected to our power centers. So we rely primarily on donations from listeners like you. So if you'd like to support our mission, we can continue to bring you quality community radio. We invite you to make a one-time donation or monthly pledge at readyforbrooklyn.org/donate. You can donate as little as a dollar or even every cent helps us to continue this day on air. So please help support independent community media by pledging whatever you can afford. And remember, the RFB is a 501c3 nonprofit, so you can charge contribution as tax deductible to the federal extent of the law. Again, that's readyforbrooklyn.org/donate. General communication is that you can listen to on the go. Listening to these shows on the go. So if you're listening on your laptop, you can listen on the go. In your car, to download the apps, go to readyforbrooklyn.org/iPhone or readyforbrooklyn.org/Android. And sign up for our newsletter to keep up to date with new programming, upcoming RFB events, interviews, ticket giveaways, special offers, and RFB swag, and more. Sign up for newsletter at readyforbrooklyn.org/newsletter. That's about all the stuff that I have, but this we can,
Thanks for having me on
the
show.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you.
That was fun. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
This ends the interview portion of the Truth to Power show. Now I'm going to share a specific experiment that I did with the previous guests on the Truth to Power show, Claire Van Winkle, Kaylin Lister, and Jessica Hines, where I had each of them answer about 20 to 25 questions, and they're restricted after the question with a part of speech. So the question, I'll give you a sample of the questions in a moment, but the questions were, the answers had to be one word and in a particular part of speech. And then this is kind of used in a Mad Libs kind of exercise where I transpose these answers into the Raven by Edgar Allan Poe. So here's a sampling of the questions I'm going to read. These are not all the questions, but these are examples of some of the questions I came up with. The first question is, what exotic, wild, or mythological beast would you prefer to have as a pet? Restricted to a noun, one word. What time of day are you at your peak? Noun. What mood are you now? Adjective. What is the ideal action of a successful person? Past tense verb. This gives you a sense of the modality. So I took the answers that Claire, Jessica, and Kaylin gave me, and then I plugged them into the format of the Raven. This is kind of something I had a slight memory of. Someone introducing me to this technique, a Mad Libs technique. But since I don't have a clear memory of when this happened, but anyway, it doesn't really matter. Regardless, I'm going to read the poem that was created out of this exercise. It is called The Persian Shorthair. Once upon a dawn resigned, Q-89, while I wrote anxious and antisocial over many magical and queer surprises of feminologically complex poems. While I nodded, nearly disturbing, suddenly there came a pushing, as if someone gently shoving, propelling at my chamber door. "'Tis some kid," I muttered, tapping my paradisaical poetics. "'Only this, and nothing more." Ah, ruckusly I remembered, it was the conflicted December, and each calm emerging journal created its adoration upon false windows. Suspiciously, I pursued the freedom. Childlessly, I succumbed to lushing, for my scene secreased with release. Sorrow for the lost Arik, for the sparse and kind teacher whom the unicorns named Arik, nameless here forevermore. And the chiffon, focused, intrigued sneezing of each off-white naked window, shied me, filled me with confident peonies, always conjured those feelings of all over again. So that now, to still the flowing of my heart, I stood processing. To some visitor, divining boasts, some late visitor gloating purchase at my chimney flute, this is it, and nothing more. Calmly I grounded my laughter, growing within me thereafter, there within me forevermore.
Surrender. I couldn't stop.